Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu.
Really, the goal of these Spark Kits is to help girls develop a critical self-awareness and gain confidence in their ability to exercise leadership and apply these key decision-making skills to generating progress on real-world issues that they identify as affecting their communities.
Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I'm your host, Ike Evans. Today, we're delighted to bring you episode 108, Empowering Girls Through Public Policy.
When we talk about well-being, for me, it's the person's ability to thrive.
Having their basic needs met, as well as having community and connection.
I think looking at an individual or a community in its entirety.
These are the moments where it's not only about celebrating, but it's about connecting with people and connecting with the community around you.
And supporting one another, continually talking to one another, sharing our resources. A community, that golden thread.
When you ask, virtually everyone agrees that public policy matters. And with this being the first session of the Texas legislature to take place in the era of COVID, there's a widespread sense that if there was ever a time to pay attention to public policy, now is the time. And yet, meaningful involvement in policy work is a challenge for many. And mental health policy is no exception. For many groups and individuals, their ability to engage in mental health policy is sharply constrained by time, budget, and lack of expertise. To help address this, in 2010, the Hogg Foundation launched the Policy Academy and Fellows Program to increase individuals and organizations' capacity and expertise to advance mental health policy in Texas, while also increasing the consumer voice in policy development and implementation. Last year, we celebrated the 10th year of this cornerstone initiative, which is still going strong with a fresh cohort of policy fellows. One of those new policy fellows, we're proud to say, is here with us to discuss her hopes and aspirations for this year and beyond. Vanessa Beltran is a newly hired policy fellow for Girls Empowerment Network, a wonderful organization which has 25 years in Central Texas but is relatively new to policy. To quote their mission, Girls Empowerment Network seeks to ignite the power in girls by teaching them the skills to thrive and believe in their ability to be unstoppable. Vanessa is joined by her policy mentor, Sarah Miller Fellows, to shed some light on what unstoppability for girls looks like in the realm of policy. Vanessa, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so thrilled to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
My first question is for you, Vanessa. You're still fairly early in your fellowship. What sorts of things have you had the opportunity to learn, and what are you anticipating will be your focus in the coming months?
Sure. Well, as you had mentioned, this is the first time that Girls Empowerment Network has had a Hogg policy fellow, and we're being relatively new to the policy space, but having a real passion for helping girls know their power. I've been working on building program capacity and enriching our programs to include advocacy. So I've been doing some research and training on curriculum development for girls to increase advocacy skills. For the last several years, we've hosted Girl Advocacy Day for middle and high school girls, which is really a celebration of Women in Advocacy, where we teach essential skills and connect them to women doing policy and advocacy work in their communities. And during the legislative years, in a normal non-COVID year, this would take place at the Capitol, where they'd be able to meet with them directly one-on-one with chiefs of staff or the legislators themselves. And in non-legislative years, this would happen at City Hall in Austin with a more local focus. We're not doing things in person this year. So for the last 6 months, I've been working to translate some of these materials and some of this knowledge into curriculum for Spark Kits. Spark Kits essentially offers our program in a box and provides a self-guided journal and materials for 25 activities, as well as access to virtual groups and other supports. And so for the last 6 months or so, I co-wrote the Lead With Your Voice Elementary and Middle School Spark Kit, which combines our own self-efficacy curriculum with the history of girls and women's activism in the U.S. With it being the 19th Amendment, it was something that we really wanted to lift up and celebrate 100 years of women's voice in the political space. And then I led the creation of the Unstoppable Activist Spark Kit, in which we collaborated with other organizations to create this middle and high school curriculum with activities provided with other people in like this youth serving advocacy space. And really the goal of these Spark Kits is to help girls develop a critical self-awareness and gain confidence in their ability to exercise leadership and apply these key decision-making skills to generating progress on real-world issues that they identify as affecting their communities. And that through this engagement with the material, they will be able to speak up for themselves and communicate the change that they wish to see. And we think that self-efficacy really promotes good mental health and resilience in the face of the challenges that they're facing now. And with COVID, what a better time to do that. And so really with this policy and advocacy focus for Spark Change Day, we're really wanting to help promote Spark Change Day, which I'll talk a little bit more, but is an expansion of our previous Girl Advocacy Day into the virtual space. And additionally, over the next few months, I'll be working in trying to follow legislation that focuses on mental health services for youth. With our 25 years of experience in working with the population, as well as from all of the literature that has come out, we know that there's a lot of challenges that are facing girlhood, and girls are more than twice than likely than boys to be diagnosed with a mood disorder in their teen years. And we're really only beginning to understand the impacts of this pandemic on girls' mental health. And that is already showing that there is really going to be a big impact. And so we just want to make sure that we are offering the support and mental health services that girls need and that will be so critical in recovering from the effects of this pandemic. That's what I've been working on. That's what I will be working on in these next few months.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds like more than a little bit. Sarah, can you give our listeners a little bit more background and context about Girls Empowerment Network, the history of the organization, and the nature of its work?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We're approaching our 25th anniversary, which is very, very exciting. It will happen this year. We were founded in 1996 in Central Texas by a group of parents who had read a book about girls' loss of self-esteem called Raising Ophelia. And they were just saying, not my daughter, not anybody's daughter, and wanted to create an organization that helped girls believe in their own power. So for many years, we were in Central Texas, and known as first the Ophelia Project, and then then Jen Austin. And we recently expanded in the last couple of years into Houston and Dallas. And really, we were no longer just Jen Austin, we were Girls Empowerment Network. And so we're now Girls Empowerment Network, serving girls statewide to help them believe in their own power and their own ability to succeed. Like Vanessa mentioned earlier, this belief in one's own ability is called self-efficacy. Self-efficacy is really foundational to girls and women's success. And the amount of self-efficacy that a person has determines the effort she will put into a subject, her resilience after failure, and her persistence in the face of challenges. And the way that we build self-efficacy is through a curriculum that highlights what we call the six C's. These are confidence, communication, collaboration, creativity, critical thinking, and coping skills. If people in the education sphere might be familiar with the 21st century learning goals. So these are the four 21st century learning goals, as well as confidence and coping skills, because we know that without having good mental health coping skills and good self-confidence, girls won't be able to achieve their highest potential. So we know that the way that you grow self-efficacy is to grow somebody's self-efficacy around a specific topic or a specific area. So for example, if a girl learns how to communicate assertively in one of our groups through a role play, she's more likely to feel comfortable raising her hand to answer a question in math class or eventually testifying in front of the legislature. And prior to COVID, we provided our 6Cs curriculum through Girl Connect, which is a school-based program that takes place both during the school day and after school, through our We Are Girls conferences, through summer camps and summer leadership programs, and lots of other workshops and similar programs. And we've continued to provide virtual Girl Connect and virtual workshops for girls, but we've also created a new avenue for our programming, which is Spark Kits, like Vanessa mentioned. They're now in their fourth edition. The Unstoppable Activist is the fourth version of Spark Kits that we're creating. And that really brings our curriculum to girls. We serve a wide, wide range of girls. The majority of the students that we serve in a typical school year are at Title I schools. Many are in sort of peri-urban areas where they might not have as much broadband internet access. And so it was really important to us that we were still able to support them and provide our curriculum in an offline manner, as well as pairing it with some of our virtual programs. So girls can either just do the Spark Kit and build amazing skill sets around each of those six C's, or they can get a Spark Kit and then also log on to join one of our virtual groups and have a chance to be in community with other girls and get support from our girl experts. And I think that especially this year, self-efficacy is important because there's actually research showing that having high rates of coping self-efficacy reduces the risk of PTSD and other trauma disorders after one is experiencing a traumatic event. And we know from psychologists and other mental health experts that COVID has caused serious mental health strain. And so it's especially important that we give girls and youth the skills to be able to cope with that and to be able to come through this challenging time stronger.
This next question is for both of you. So I think many of us who are like from a certain social background have memory of things like, you know, student council, student government, or similar activities coming up. I would think that it's never too early for people in general to start, you know, thinking of themselves as leaders when it comes to civic engagement, at least in terms of how it is that they might be able to, you know, to impact their own communities. What particular challenges or obstacles do girls experience that an organization like yours works to overcome?
Well, girls certainly face unique challenges to knowing their own power and feeling capable of using their voices and thinking of themselves as leaders, challenges that are especially compounded for Black, Brown, Indigenous, and other girls of color. For example, one of the stats we frequently cite is that starting as young as 6 years old, girls start to identify intelligence as a male trait. Girls in high school, about 60% of girls in high school say that they will avoid activities like raising their hand in class when they don't feel like they are attractive enough. And that girls are more than six times more likely to be told to be careful than boys. Now, any one of those stats individually doesn't necessarily address girls' access to leadership and civic engagement, but when you put them all together, there's messages that girls get over their entire lives about their worth and about their ability to lead. And we have a world right now where girls outperform boys academically, but women hold fewer than 14% of leadership positions across our country. And so our programs help girls overcome these messages by building their belief in their own ability as well as concrete skills in each of the six C's. Now I can give you some specific examples from our work if you'd be interested.
Okay, yeah. No, I'd absolutely be interested in specific examples.
Yeah, so some of the examples that we found, particularly to the time of COVID, were actually what came out of a project we called Coping and Connections. We, in April and then a second round in July, spent an enormous amount of time calling parents of children in our programs and talking to girls themselves whenever possible. And we surveyed about a little over 280 of them all told and found enormous amounts of stress and anxiety. 60% of families reported that they had lost a job or had income reduced in some way. And one in five said that they had income reduced to the degree that they were having difficulty meeting essential needs, such as getting food and paying rent or mortgage. But one of the things that was really beautiful in finding this is that we were seeing this incredible resilience amongst the girls that had been through our programs. They said that when they were stressed out, they used breathing exercises that they learned in their programs. When they were upset about not being able to see their friends every day, they were using coloring pages or doing some of the yoga poses that they've been taught. And so they have this resilience, but at the same time, they were having challenges like not having home internet to access virtual classes, or if they do, not having enough internet, if they do, not having enough internet bandwidth to support multiple students in the house at the same time. And they and their parents really wanted opportunities for peer connection and creativity, which resulted in the creation of the Spark Kit and the virtual programs that we've been talking about. And we're really excited to continue that work to help girls become leaders. And Vanessa actually has some wonderful experience that we've been, for how we've been using advocacy as a framework to build girls' self-efficacy.
Okay. Vanessa, do you have anything to add?
Yes. Yeah, just related to how we are helping girls overcome these obstacles for leadership. There's a really interesting report that came out earlier this year, actually, from Girls Leadership that shows us that Black and Latinx girls are ready to lead. They have the aspiration and capacity, but they often don't get the support that they need from their school or school systems because of gender and racial biases that really lead to deficit-based thinking, and it hinders girls from reaching their full potential. And so in preparing this advocacy curriculum, we really see it as a framework for building self-efficacy because we're able to pull together all of the six C's, confidence, communication, collaboration, creativity, critical thinking, and coping skills, and actually put them into practice in this advocacy space in collaboration with other girls. And we're really equipping them with the knowledge that they can do anything within their own lives, but also that they can change the world. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of our work that we're doing in the Spark Change Project and our peer facilitators who are girls that are really just highlighting what a impactful program this has been and all the potential that it has to make a difference in their communities.
Okay, so Sarah, this next question is for you. So the world has changed quite a bit, you know, since our previous cohort of policy fellows, which I think would have started in 2018, because, you know, they go on 2-year cycles, right? So I don't know, just with the pandemic and everything, how has Girls Empowerment Network been sort of pivoting its work or its focus, if in fact they have?
I think most of our pivot has really been twofold. It's been around the creation of these new programs and also in our understanding of how to best build self-efficacy in girls. I actually wasn't at the organization. We feel like this kind of happened at a perfect time. I joined the organization as a program evaluator in January 2019, so just over 2 years ago. And was able to join and was super passionate about the work here. I felt really deeply connected to the mission. But I'd previously done policy work at another organization, and I was kind of missing getting to do that more direct advocacy. And probably 2 weeks after mentioning that to my supervisor in terms of future goals, the Hogg Foundation grant application showed up in our inboxes. So it was really just amazing timing. What's changed in our time in since 2018 with us is we've really laser refined our focus on self-efficacy. We've refined our curriculum continuously, but in a way where we feel like we've really got a hold on how to build self-efficacy effectively, which we're seeing in some of our program outcomes results. And we feel like now we're at a place where we're really able to turn from not just building girls' self-efficacy in themselves, but building their self-efficacy and using what we've learned to be able to have an impact in the policy space.
Okay, great. So Vanessa, this next question is for you. So I am curious about how it is that perhaps your own kind of personal background or experience might be infusing your work as a new policy fellow, and if there were anything about that that you'd be willing to share.
Sure. I think that whenever I hear the question, you know, where do you come from, or like some variation of that, I always like wonder how far back to go. And I think that the place that feels the most essential to go back to is my childhood in Mexico, because my background is actually as a dietitian. I trained as a dietitian at the University of Texas, mostly because I have this deep love of food. Being an immigrant and being undocumented for a long time, a long period of my childhood in which I was unable to go home and visit my extended family, and in which I was really adjusting to the culture here in the United States. You know, it was such a benefit to me to be able to pass in school and to be able to learn the language quickly and be able to assimilate into all of the, you know, processes that were going on at my elementary school, certainly. But when I would come home, there were just like these rich foods and these like recipes that had been in my family forever. And when I was able to see my family like learning how to cook from my tía Elsa, and all of the ways in which food really brought our family together and helped me make sense and meaning out of my story and out of my heritage and out of my culture, really framed just the way that I thought that this could be that food was a possibility, was an provided endless possibility for us to come together. And so I studied nutrition and wanted to practice in a community that resembled mine growing up. And so I always worked as a dietitian in highly impacted communities. So in East Austin at Sandra Joy Anderson and Pflugerville. And what I was really seeing in my patients' lives was that it wasn't just about the food. Of course, they had preferences. Of course, they had food stories. But some of the stress that they were experiencing from just housing instability, or from, you know, the opportunities that they had in terms of labor, or from even just like the lack of access that they had to certain treatments or medicines and things like that, it really showed me that everything is an everything. And it's really hard to separate just mental health from physical health. And I would see that with patients who were experiencing stress that they would embody, and that it would affect the way that they ate, and that would affect the way that they slept, and would affect the way that they worked and played and lived. And so that experience of working as a dietitian in the community and seeing all of these systems come together to structure opportunity for my patients made me want to go and get my master's of public health. So I studied for a year and a half at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health to get a degree in social and behavioral sciences and a concentration in public health leadership. Because I really wanted to understand how I could be involved in something like policy to make more sustainable and widespread changes in the communities that I cared most about. And so coming to Girls Empowerment Network and having this opportunity with the Hogg Foundation has been wonderful, because it really plays into my passion and commitment to expanding access and increasing opportunity for women of color and underserved communities. And so for me, when I think about the Spark Kits, or when I think about Spark Change Day, or any of the advocacy work that we will be doing with the legislative session, it is with the goal of promoting people's well-being, which, you know, is beyond just the way that we think of mental health or like physical health, but just ensuring that they have the opportunity to access the very best possible life that they can, and make their communities as best and as whole as they can.
So Vanessa, and forgive me, but this follow-up question just came to me, talking about your interest in nutrition. So, and this may be a podcast or even a rant for another day, but I have myself noted how, you know, nutrition discourse is very often, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of very complex reasons, it's coded as white and middle class. And so I can't help but be curious about how it is that you've either noticed that yourself, or even tried to sort of intervene, resist, or jam up that understanding through your work.
That's an excellent question, Ike, and something that I actually work a lot on. Like, that is an issue that I've identified with my colleagues. I'm actually on the board of the Austin Dietitians Association as the Director of Diversity and Inclusion. And I'm also in New Leaders Council working on a project where we are trying to provide mentorship opportunities for young Black and Brown nutrition students at the University of Texas. And we also want to include more of the social determinants of health throughout the entire nutrition curriculum, because I think that you're spot on. Nutrition as a profession is female and it is white. So I represent, one of the few dietitians in Austin, and also just across the country, that are, you know, identify as Hispanic or Latinx. Only 3% of dietitians identify as Hispanic or Latinx, and around 7% identify as Black. And so you can see that a lot of the patients that experience like this disproportionate burden of like chronic disease, whether it's diabetes or hypertension, or even kidney disease, who really need that care from dietitians who can provide medical nutritional therapy and like very specific training on things like counting calories, or like what are the different nutrients that are going to impact your like levels of like, you know, kidney function, need to understand the cultural underpinnings of the foods that you are recommending to people, and need to make it culturally relevant. And I think that food, beyond being a place of story and a way to make meaning, is also something that you can really use for resistance. You know, it is so hard, I think, for a person who is Latinx sometimes to have access to all of the foods that you remember or that you long for from home, and making those like small choices to incorporate that more in your day to day when it feels like there are so many things that make that a challenge, I think is a meaningful way to connect with culture and also to resist all of these other systemic issues that exist within food systems and within food ways. And ultimately, I think, make it more personal. It's a way of making nutrition personal and making it tailored to the individual and to the things that matter to them. So yeah, that's something that I'm very, very interested in.
Okay, absolutely. So this next question is for both of you. Let's talk about the Spark Change Project, and what should our listeners know about it, what it is, and what its significance.
I can definitely speak to the sort of broad organizational overview, and then Vanessa, I think, would love to give you a little bit of her on the ground activity. And Ike, you saw me smile as you asked that question, because I was like, oh, this is Vanessa's favorite thing. And
okay, great.
Something we talk about all the time. I was like, oh my gosh, yes, this is the perfect question. Vanessa is being incredibly modest and has done just such incredible work in this area and is such a leader in this area. I feel so privileged to have her as part of the team, because she has such amazing leadership skills in decolonializing nutrition work. It's just so powerful. So our Spark Change Project is actually a partnership between Girls Empowerment Network and the Excellence and Advancement Foundation, which is an organization that has a goal of building positive gender and racial identity and building activism among youth. So we were able to partner with EAF to have a pilot program of what we hope will be a continuing partnership that's going to take place. Well, it is taking place now, January to August of this year. And we're folding it into the celebration of our 25th anniversary. And it's a collaborative initiative that is designed to uplift girls of color in Texas. It's combining our foundation of mental health services, coping skills, building self-efficacy with EAF's wonderful skill set in creating change that is even greater than the sum of its parts. The goal is to empower, inspire, and train the next generation of female activists of color who will make change for their communities and raise awareness related to issues like mental and behavioral health services and access to those services, positive gender and racial identity development, building self-efficacy in adolescent girls, expanding support services for youth on the margins in Texas, and reducing the stress, isolation, and loneliness during the continued impacts of the COVID pandemic. And I'll let Vanessa give a little more on the ground detail.
Yes, please. Let's let Miss Modest strut a little bit.
That's all right. But we are doing this work through a couple of different venues, and a lot of it centers on the Peer Fellows, who are really giving us a lot of their own lived experience and collaborating with us to plan Spark Change Day, which we'd mentioned before, Spark Change Camp, which will be happening over the summer, and other related programs. So in January, we interviewed over 100 high school girls. We had no idea. We put this application out into the universe and hoped that at least 5 girls would apply so that we could hire these peer facilitators to really make sure that our activity was being youth-led and that we were centering their ideas, the issues that they had identified. And so ultimately, from those over 100 high school girls that we interviewed, we hired 5. And because of the virtual environment, we were able to hire girls from Austin, Houston, and San Antonio to be a part of this first cohort. And we're providing them with training on topics ranging from identity, anti-racism, communication, and organizing. They're each working with a mentor who is also a woman of color, and who will be with them throughout their time at Spark Change Project. And I'm lucky enough to be one of those mentors. I have a really wonderful mentee. And they will really be planning and executing a town hall in which they'll be able to bring together girls from their communities, their high schools, the different extracurricular activities that they're a part of, to discuss issues and really take in what it is that they are identifying as needs in their community. And from there, we'll bring together experts, decision makers, hopefully some legislators, to work on those specific issues and have dialogue at Spark Change Day. And so that's really just, you know, the next 6 months. And the Unstoppable Activist Spark Kit really supports these efforts, as girls who are able to engage with this curriculum will be really well prepared for Spark Change Day with the advocacy skills that they will hopefully be gaining from that material. So for me, it's really exciting. The most exciting thing is, of course, getting to work with these 5 amazing peer facilitators.
Thank you, both of you, for all of that information. And anything else about, you know, about the Spark Change Project that you could send my way, you know, just because, I mean, and this is a reminder to our listeners as well, Girls Empowerment Network is a grantee of the Hogg Foundation. And so it's my pleasure to, you know, to help you just promote, you know, whatever it is that you're doing. So my last question for both of you, do you have any personal moments or stories that testify to the impact that you're having or would like to have, either as individuals or as, you know, members of the team?
I can go first. Well, especially because I had just brought up my mentee, who, yeah, I think we're providing them this training and stuff like that, right? But she has come to me already with like such a curiosity and so much knowledge and so much just hunger for learning. She goes to a school here in Austin, actually, that it's wild how perfect the metaphor is. It's a magnet school that is on the top floor of a Title I school that has mostly Black and Brown students. And so from her magnet school in which, you know, she is really a minority, like there are most of the students with her are white students. She has really gotten to experience just a lot of, she's able to identify the disparities that occur in regard to school discipline. And so whenever we were talking about, you know, what are you identifying in your community? What are you seeing that you feel like you would want to make a difference on or like see some some change made. And she said that it was school discipline, and especially when it comes to harm reduction strategies for substances that occur in school, because she has seen kids getting handcuffed in her school and being taken away for, just relatively small amounts of substances that they might have. And she has identified her issue that she wants to work on. We talked about writing an op-ed so that all of the information that she's gathering, she can think about how to communicate to other people and to teach some of the students about what maybe their other options are. What are some harm reduction strategies that are being implemented in other schools or in other states that they could look at? What's a zero tolerance drug policy? We know that like that is very, very punitive. Like, what are some alternatives? And so she's doing this beautiful research and has the aspiration to submit this op-ed to like the Statesman and, you know, the Chronicle and all of these things. And it's such a joy to watch her and to, of course, like provide little bits of support and like, this is how you write an op-ed and like, let's figure out how we submit your op-ed and try to get it published somewhere. But she really has just so much of like her own interests and her own passion for this already. So being able to equip her with the specific skills to make that impact just so much further reaching is a really beautiful thing to be a part of.
I have, I was gonna talk about Girl Advocacy Day because it was really my first time. The 2019 Girl Advocacy Day was really the first time I got to see Girls Empowerment Network programs in action. And even though I run impact and I do data analysis and my world is very much databases and spreadsheets, I also at heart am like a former camp counselor who is happy to get up and play a game and color page or whatever. And I love the opportunities that I get to do when I get to be in our programs with girls. And we had gathered around 100 girls from all over Texas that had come in, and they got to come up with questions for their legislators. They had a panel of four female legislators, and then they got to pick a policy issue that they cared about, which I think is one of the things that is coolest about what we do. We let girls lead in many ways. We have this curriculum that has a bunch of modules, but the modules that each girl gets are really based on what they need and what they're interested in. If girls are talking about, you know, challenges in relationships, we go with healthy relationships. If they're wanting to know more about leadership opportunities, we teach them about the history of women's leadership and how they can identify leadership qualities within themselves. So these girls get to pick from about 10 policy issues, which are the ones that are the most interested in. And I got to lead a group on LGBTQ issues in schools. And for many of the people at the table, It was really the first time they had necessarily been with a peer from the LGBTQ community who was out. I should also mention, I meant to mention this earlier, we define girls as anybody who identifies as a girl, including trans or non-binary people, and who feels that this is the space for them, feels comfortable in this space. So we have a fairly expansive definition of girl. And we do have students who come into our program in third grade and graduate our program as identifying as a girl and who transition, and they are still continue to be welcome in our programs. And I feel very proud about that. So I got to be in this amazing Girl Advocacy Day. I got to support these youth around a policy issue that they were really passionate about, defining what were some specific asks they wanted to make to legislators. And then they got to have a meeting with a female chief of staff and say, hey, this is what I care about. This is why I care about it. This is how it impacts me. And I'll never forget coming back from that. And a couple of days later, I'm putting together all of our survey data because that's my job. I just spent a lot of time making spreadsheets. And 98% of the girls had said that they felt more confident in their ability to advocate for social change. And I remember running to Brittany Yelverton, who's our director of community advancement, and Girl Advocacy Day was really her baby when it first started, and going, oh my God, Brittany, can you imagine what the world would be like if 98% of youth felt like they could advocate for social change and be successful and they knew how to? Like, what an incredible world would we live in? And that just, you know, it was one of the first things I got to experience of our programs, and it just cemented for me, like, this is the place. This is where I need to be, and this is where I want to be.
All right. So we are talking about our policy fellows, but more importantly, we are talking about what it entails to, you know, to make a commitment to fostering leadership, particularly among those who have been historically overlooked. And so as many organizations like Girls Empowerment Network, as we can enlist in the struggle, the better off we all are. So Vanessa, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time. We really do appreciate it, and good luck with everything that you've got on your plate for this year and beyond. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So quite a bit of time has passed between when we started putting this episode together and my finally being able to deliver it to you now. Things have happened in our lives that I feel that I should mention before signing off. First, and by far the most significant, is that the Hogg Foundation is reeling from the recent passing of Stephanie Bryan, our senior program officer and consumer family liaison. She passed away on February 14th, 2021, from COVID-related complications. And so, as of this recording, we are still in processing mode. We will have a lot more to say about Stephanie and her life and legacy in the weeks and months to come. Second, this podcast was produced during what, for many of us here in Central Texas, has been the worst weather nightmare that we have experienced. The winter storms that have caused so much chaos and disruption over the past week. We are just now finally, it seems, starting to come out of it. We hope that everyone in certainly the area where the Hogg Foundation is based, Central Texas, but really throughout the Lone Star State, is doing their best to stay warm and safe. And again, we will be saying a lot more about this in the weeks ahead. And finally, for a bit of good news, our executive director, Dr. Octavio N. Martinez Jr., was recently named to the White House Task Force on Health Equity, and so we're going to be saying quite a bit more about this in the weeks and months ahead. As always, you can find Into the Fold on most popular podcast apps, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, and Google Play Music. From all of us here at the Hogg Foundation, thank you so much for joining us.